This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
As Obi-Wan Kenobi once said, hello there, and many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view. My name is Joseph Scrimshaw. That's not a point of view. It is just the truth. I got a sheet that says it and everything. Anyway, welcome to Favorite Points of View. This show is a part of the Four Center podcast feed, and here on Four Center, we like to celebrate Star Wars, and with me to celebrate is Ken Knapsack.
If it's on the outline, it is you. It is real. I'm Ken Knapsack indeed. It says it there too.
I almost just started the show with an existential crisis of like, is my name a point of view? I do exist, right? I do. I've seen photos.
You know, as someone who was recently rejected for that coveted blue check mark, which I was anticipating the rejection, obviously, it's kind of a funny process right now. I don't know who I am either. Like, do I count, Joseph? Do I count? Do I exist?
Well, I got a blue check mark back in the day when they were handing them out much more easily. And I wake up wondering, like, what happens if the blue check mark goes away? Is that a sign that I'm like fading away? Is it Back to the Future time travel? Am I disappearing from the photo?
It's a funny thing in a funny world, but yes.
Exactly. It is a funny world. We try to have some fun within this funny world, and that's really what this Favorite Points of View show is about. We ask different people, different listeners, their favorite of something in Star Wars, and we get to hear not only what it is, but oftentimes why, and it lets us have a more appreciation appreciation for just the variety of things to love in Star Wars. And a lot of times that we don't just love things randomly, that there's often a reason because of who we are, when we first encountered Star Wars. And it's just a great way to celebrate all that. This episode, we asked people about the Star Wars outfits, costumes, fashions that mean the most to them and why. We had to break this into two episodes because we got a lot of great feedback from our patrons. So if you want to check out the previous episode, you can do that. But for now, you're listening to this one. Why go anywhere? This is an opportunity, Ken. Yeah. I said this on the last episode, for us to celebrate the work of the costume designers whose names are known, but sometimes not as celebrated as the Ben Burtts or the John Williams. So we're talking about, John Molo, the original designer, Nilo Rodriguez-Gemero, who did the designs for Return of the Jedi, Trisha Begar, who featured on all those great behind the scenes of the prequels where we learned all about the different costume designer, Michael Kaplan from the sequel trilogy, and then on Solo and Rogue One, Dave Crossman and Glenn Dillon. And then, of course, you have all the other animated show designers, comic book artists, and different people who have just created the look of Star Wars.
They've absolutely created this galaxy, the one we like to roam around in and buy in gift shops.
Nice outfit. Looks great. I would like to buy the outfit and an action figure of the person wearing the outfit, and maybe someday an action figure of the designer themselves. If I could buy a John Molo action figure, I absolutely would.
Oh, that'd be great. I mean, as we're starting this episode, I'm looking across at a Black Series Rebels, shout out to Stephen Ox, Black Series Hasbro Stitch, Princess Leia and Combat Poncho, right? And I was looking at it as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, someone came up with that. The simplest, coolest thing in Endor. I just love it. It's been my favorite figure, been one of my favorite Leia looks. And like, yeah, someone was like, what shall we do with this warrior princess down on the forest floor?
Yeah, I know. You like hear those stories of like Mark Hamill suggesting that Luke looked like something out of Mad Max in Return of the Jedi because he's been fighting, you know, and you remember, you imagine an image like that compared to Luke in Return of the Jedi and imagine like how big a difference that these choices that the designers come up with and that the creators make that truly change the nature of the thing, right? Indoor ponchos don't grow on trees. Somebody made that decision.
Yes. Yes.
And we celebrate that. To celebrate that, we're going to get into this. We'll take turns reading these great entries. I'm going to read the first one here. This comes to us, Ken, from Justin Jacobson. Short and sweet. Justin says, I like the uniform of the central Isopter cultists on Jedha in Rogue One. Their helmet and striped robe look like some kind of cocoon that will open into a terrifying butterfly. I like leading with horror. That's awesome to say this design is my favorite because it's successfully frightening.
Yeah. For some reason, I'm thinking of Iron Butterfly, White Room, Black Heart. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just had to do a remind of myself. And these are spectacular outfits. The face apparatus, if you will, stands out. This is a great choice here. To start us off.
Yeah. Now, do you where did you encounter this one first? Did you actually see it in the film or did you see it in a book?
I think it was more in a book or maybe even something that came out before, not the teaser. I don't know. It's sometimes hard to remember. You know, do you get a trading card or a box of cereal or a bag of oranges with something on it that you're keen to look for? And I think there might have been magazines of, a Vanity Fair picture in the background. You see them. So I think I was anticipating seeing these fine folks, the death worshiping cult in Rogue One. And so they did kind of stand out and they really have that Star Wars feel. They could go anyway. Bounty hunter, rogue Jedi, rogue Sith, or death worshiping cult.
Yeah, no, I mean, Rogue One in Solo, I think in particular, not that the other films aren't this, but they're really rich in the background characters that you only see for a second and can really appreciate more in books and comics. I forgot that these are the characters who feature so prominently in that Star Wars arc where Luke goes to Jedha, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and this design is amazing. Yeah, I think what's kind of unique about it is how incredibly connected the mask and the robes are. Yeah, the robes are wrapped differently. We've seen many a robe in Star Wars, but the fact that as Justin says, these are wrapped like a cocoon. And yeah. You really are like, are you turning into like Godzilla under there? What might possibly come out of there? Yeah, and I love that the masks, they have like a little bit of synergy, I think, with the Guavian Death Gang, with that kind of central eye. So it looks like something that could have evolved in the galaxy lots of different ways, and yet it's still entirely its own. All these great yellow and brown and black. And more than anything, Ken, this is the weird thing for me. I'm looking at these pictures. They remind me of some of the weirder hotel carpets that you find at big conventions.
That's crazy. I did not have that thought in my mind, but the moment you started opening your mouth and you said, I was like, hotels, they look like a nice Hyatt Regency in Seattle or something.
Yeah. So it's not, you know, like too crazy, but it's distinctive enough. There are people like, oh yeah. And like, I've gone to enough conventions now that have a relationship with the carpet. Like there are a couple hotels associated with Dragon Con and the one that has hosted the Doctor Who convention Gallifrey One in Los Angeles for years, where like people will cosplay as the carpet, or like, I'm a Dalek, but I'm also the carpet.
Right.
That they become such a defining thing. One of those carpets was featured in Loki from one of the Dragon Con hotels in a recent episode. So that's part of why it's on my mind. Awesome. But it's just like, yeah, man, this is so great. If these were like a little bit more of a major character and there were action figures of this, we'd have bed sheets that look like this.
I love your connection to the sense memory of all things at conventions, which are strong. I looked at this and I was like, welcome to Scottsdale, sir. Here's your key. That was 11 a.m. That's a great visual. It's true. And it's a great color scheme. It works. And again, this magical, it's so Star Wars, the thing we sometimes can't fully explain, but they got it.
But they got it. I think it's for me, it's the old and the new. It's that helmet looks like, yeah, we've seen things kind of like that. So it feels like we're in the galaxy, but that robe, the way it looks like it's going to explode and bats are going to come out. So great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it.
No, sorry. I just did scrolled down. Now my memory jogged of where we kind of first saw it. It was the celebration reel at Celebration Europe that was July 2016. Getting us ready for Rogue One. There was a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and that kind of then went public. And that's where they first really made the appearance. And so then you were kind of keyed up. You were ready to look in the background and find them.
Oh yeah. This main picture of the three of them huddled together.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Yeah. I think my final thought on hotel carpets, which is exactly what this podcast is supposed to be about, is I think a part of their power for me is, you know, obviously do a lot of walking at a convention. But for me, I end up spending lots of time backstage for techs or before shows. So I have a very strong association with, is this a fun carpet to pace on during a tech or before a show? And I would love to pace on top of these characters before doing some stand-up.
Conventions carpet ranked, coming soon, maybe our Patreon page. I think that'd be great for you.
That seems like a Patreon episode for sure. All right, great thought, Justin, and great deep cut. It's a great opportunity for us to really look at and celebrate a character that I've seen but I haven't really focused on. So thank you so much, Justin. Ken, do you want to take the next one?
Absolutely. What we love to do here is just that, what you described. Now, number two comes from our buddy Outlaw Adam Knight. He had a great little personal essay he let us share on a recent Force Center episode with questions. He writes this: while my first instinct is to just shout out my earliest Halloween memory, dressing up as Luke from A New Hope, it behooves me to let my age and wisdom skim through all the Star Wars I have consumed. As such, I've got to give the nod to Cad Bane. Yes, in addition to Star Wars, I have a very strong spaghetti Western love. While I don't cosplay per se, in my other job, I wear a lot of hats and vests and occasionally some long cloaks, dusters, and chaps. Ah, the wonderful world of professional wrestling. I added that sentence. As such, the Cad Bane look and vibe just feels exactly right to me, melding two of my favorite things together in a way that is frankly 100% what Star Wars is to me. That's a powerful sentence to end with, Joseph, just how we love attaching so much to these things in Star Wars we love. Let's talk about Cad Bane and spaghetti Western of it all.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before, about how much Cad Bane is just going for it, right? Like sometimes Star Wars will be like, ooh, interesting, that has a slight touch of this genre. And Cad Bane stole a big chunk of the genre on a job and said, nope, this is mine. but I think what really works for me about Cad Bane's outfit is, again, it's got that balance of the old and the new, because the familiar and the exotic, put it that way.
I like that.
I don't think Cad Bane would work as well for me if he did not have those incredibly prominent tubes, right?
Yes.
The weird face neck tubes, because it is such a visual contrast with the hat and the duster, right? And like the hat and the duster are what really make it. There's no ambiguity. This is a Western Duros, right? This is a Duros who really enjoys the film Rio Bravo. Like, there's no doubt about it. But those tubes make it like, but it's that genre through the filter of this uniquely Star Wars aesthetic. So it's not just the Western. It's the Western through the filter of Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking about it, and I think you're really right, because as I've said before in other episodes, so we'll go too deep. I'm still shocked Cad Bane worked for me, and I'm not a spaghetti Western lover in the sense of a Rolodex of all the spaghetti Westerns that I love and watch, but I'm a Tombstone, Young Guns, late 80s, early 90s popcorn Western kind of guy. And my pro wrestling gimmick hat involved the cowboy hat for many, many years. So I have an affinity for them, I guess. But it shouldn't work for me. And it does. And I think you're really focusing on that micro detail that just goes, yep, but it's Star Wars. It's this thing, but those tubes and this guy and this voice, it's Star Wars. So you're drawn away from the overt homage to, Clint Eastwood and a toothpick.
Yeah, I mean, in the toothpick, I love that the toothpick is just a toothpick, because we could have made it some sort of like hydro toothpick or some sort of
hydro pick.
Yeah, this is an e-web repeating toothpick. Get it explained to us. But yeah, I think also the another big prominent thing. So like, you got the tubes to offset the hat.
Yeah,
and then the duster, the long jacket, right? Which is really cool and just does speak to that. Like the wind is whistling during a duel and it flaps a little bit, and it's just it cuts a mean figure, and what all is in there and what all is it concealing, all that great stuff going on. But when you look at the jacket, you can't really see the jacket without seeing the big tech on his wrist.
Mm. Yes.
So there's another great balancing moment there.
That balance, that's part of, I think you're touching on a key ingredient, and I love Adam just describing, you know, hey, these two things that I love mash together and they work so well, and there's so much to the success of the character beyond the look, but it, without a doubt, starts with the look, and it begins there, and they're basically, you know, hey, here's what you got. And even now the slightly updated version in Bad Batch, and now he's, you know, tapping the bullets on his belt like he's waiting for Marty McFly to meet him in the center of a town square there. In my mind, those things don't necessarily work for me, but they all add up, and it's those little details. Great call, great pull.
Yeah. And I mean, I like how Adam shares that this is not only something that he likes aesthetically, but he has worn some of these things. Yeah. And, you know, it's just a power to the clothes make the mood of, we know that feeling of I so appreciate that from being a performer and being able to wear costumes, how much they change your mood or your flow. Even in sketches where I've got to, you know, play a Jedi for comedy, the hood up and flipping the hood down, it just, you know, it makes you feel that mood of like, I'm calm, I'm peaceful, now I'm here to present something. And dressing up with Cad Bane, like Cad Bane, or not even Cad Bane, but just dressing up in this Western style makes you feel like, yep, I'm the law in town, and if there's a problem, I'll move my duster back and I'll show you I'm packing. Just puts you in that mood, right?
It does. Do, 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 do. Yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely great one. Any other Cad Bane thoughts for you, Ken?
No, I'm just questioning why I don't have a lot of Cad Bane merch, because in the end, he definitely became one of my favorite characters. It still is for sure, but I need some Cad Bane merch. I have some more shelf room now. I'll get a Cad Bane. I'll get that exclusive one they released.
Yeah, I think they'll be releasing some Cad Bane from Bad Batch stuff, you know, probably here. I did look after he showed up, and we're all so excited and really enjoying his character and what it means. I did look up that his main Clone Wars figure, and I always forget that it is not friendly to collectors who don't open, because he doesn't have his hat on. He comes with his hat.
Right.
But the action figure looks like this is Embo just after another sharpshooter shot his hat off. And you get to see his very blue head.
That's dangerous, man. Forcing collectors to take him out of the box.
I know. I gotta have a duel with myself if I ever get that Cad Bane, whether or not I'm going to keep him in the package. Great thoughts, Adam. We'll move on to our next entry from Will Dixon. Will says, I am torn between Embo in the Crimson Corsair. Oh, what a great place to be, I think. Will continues, but I'll give the nod to Embo. He has that Chambara aesthetic without looking too earthly samurai. He is a space samurai. The combination of his eyes, that magical hat, and his blended monk bounty hunter garb does it for me. I like the nod to the traditional samurai wear with the metal chest and shoulder plate paired with a Hakama-looking skirt and bandolier. It doesn't hurt that he has an Anuba animal companion either. I could go on, but you get the point. He's awesome. That is a good Force Center shirt. I could go on, but you get the point. It's awesome. Great entry, Will. Ken, what are your thoughts? Embo is close to my heart. Yeah. What are your Embo thoughts and particularly the way that Will is describing him?
Yeah, it really does work. It's not that it's just similar to Cad Bane, but it's clearly part of what I think the Clone Wars does so well is we all know some of the influences of Star Wars, George specifically, and it's like let's put them all in here and really just kind of make them work. So we're not just going swiping different looks. We're having meaning. We're putting stuff behind it. Therefore, connects to those that love this. Love these. You know, now we're talking westerns. We're talking samurai wear, and I think Embo stands out for that reason. And there's such mystery behind him and that design. Whereas like Cad Bane, sure, there's mystery. We don't know where he went to elementary school, but Embo to me still, you look at him, you don't know anything about him. You know everything you need. In the look, feel, the attitude, the atmosphere. So I know Embo is tops on your list, so I definitely want to concede the floor. But Embo works so well. Again, and this is before Constable Zuvio, right?
Yes.
I've got a picture up right now. I'm looking at Embo, and I'm like, there's a point in my Star Wars life where I would have been like, I don't think so. And then now I look at it and it just feels so right for the Clone Wars, for Star Wars, and for this character. So cheers to Embo.
Yeah, yeah. Will is breaking it down with more knowledge in detail than I have. But I think what I really like about Embo's look and his genesis, like he was introduced in this episode that was an homage to Kurosawa. So obviously samurai elements in Kurosawa in particular are a big part of Star Wars, but I really like that his genesis is coming from like a really specific respect of a lot of these design ideas, a lot of these conceptual and moral ideas, even from what's in the episode Bounty Hunters that's pulled from Kurosawa. So it all makes sense. His genesis makes sense. And I think for me, I think I've said this before, like when I was first watching Clone Wars and was like, wow, this is even better than people told me. When I got to the Bounty Hunters episode, I really loved the episode, but I was really drawn to Embo because there is this design evolution in Star Wars that because there isn't a lot of CGI, Bounty Hunters look kind of a certain way and just kind of the scum of the galaxy in Jabba's palace. That there's a certain aesthetic of there's definitely some Goonie people, right? There's definitely their Hermiodals in the background. But the ones that I concentrated on growing up in the original trilogy era were the badasses, the ones who are your sort of like, I'm drawn to them because I kind of am afraid of them and I want to be them. Like, I don't want to meet Boba Fett in a dark alley. I want to be Boba Fett in a dark alley and be cool. That's so cool. And then a prequel trilogy comes along and the vision of what the Star Wars palette looks like expands so much and includes lots of different shapes and sizes because of, you know, not that there weren't some different shapes and sizes, but shapes and sizes that can only be generated in a computer. Ben Quadraneros, that kind of thing. And then the Clone Wars comes out and it's got a lot of that prequel aesthetic of that different design, sometimes a little bit more playful or silly aspect to it. And then Embo comes along and he's got some of that aesthetic of the prequel era Star Wars, but I can just see him standing right next to the original bounty hunters getting orders to go hunt Han Solo from Vader. I can see him standing right in between Dengar and IG-88 and really making Dengar look even shabbier.
Dengar being really upset about it.
Yeah, yeah. No offense to Dengar lovers. I love Dengar, but and he's half badass and half... you had a rough morning, didn't you, Dengar? And that's his charm. But Embo just looks hauntingly cool. He is utterly of the time that he was designed, the episode that he was introduced in. But there's something about him to me that looks like he is just kind of like in the middle of the circle of all the different eras of Star Wars Venn diagram design. Like Embo's in the center for me. Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love those thoughts there. And you said something that made me just think to, I know we're talking outfits and costume designs mostly here, but also just character design. And I know you got a lot of design skills in your background too, Joseph, but the old shadow test stuff of the shapes of characters.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think the prequels did too, because they weren't beholden to humans playing the actors or just, you know, some bulky costumes that hopefully worked for Phil Tippett. Like, and the original trilogy pulled off amazing things. I think everyone knows that. And Jabba is certainly his own shape and shadow.
Absolutely. Yes.
But you know what I mean? Like you mentioned Quadrennos, but there's just a lot of, they were able to do that kind of classic design thing of just take away the details. What is the shape of the character? And then translate that to the Clone Wars. Cad Bane and Embo both come along and they're so unique in terms of just the shadow they cast up against the wall. But yet they fill in those fine details with the Star Wars we know and love. And that stands out over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think my final Embo thought, which Will touches on really well here, is about the cool hat. Right. Mm-hmm. I think he also just sort of fulfilled the promise of the premise of like when Empire Strikes Back came out and the bounty hunters mostly just stood there being unbelievably cool in a business meeting. It was this flight of fantasy of you have the action figures and you have to make up what their different blasters do, or is there any, what other hidden tech might be in Dengar's armor, or what can fold out of IG-88? You just got to imagine it. And here comes Embo and he looks cool and you feel like, oh wow, I wonder what he does with that hat. Damn. Here's what he does with the hat. And you get to see it in action is, you know, a shield and a throwing device and a sledding device in one of the later Clone Wars episodes. And there's a reason I think that some of us kind of drool over Embo because he fulfills so many ideas of bounty hunters, as well as being, you know, having this sort of ambiguity to his moral code in a great, interesting way.
Yeah. Hail Embo.
Hail Embo. So, yeah, great outfit, great character. Thank you for sharing that. Well, Ken, you have any other Embo thoughts you wanted to share?
No, not yet. I guess another figure I'm going to have to add to the collection.
Very, very happy to have this one. He's sitting right next to Clone Wars Kenobi, and maybe they're going to have a fight someday. We'll see. Right now they've been getting along. It's great. Do you want to read our next entry?
Love to. This is from David Litchfield. David writes, my granddad was a huge UK wrestling fan, and one of the many times we watched Return of the Jedi together, he would point out that the Gamorrean guards were dressed exactly like one of his favorite wrestlers, the great Giant Haystacks. I still think of Mr. Haystacks when I watch those scenes in Jabba's palace. Unfortunately, my granddad passed away a number of years ago, but I'm sure he would have got a real kick out of seeing the Gamorrean guards, albeit far less Haystacks-like, actually in a wrestling ring in The Mandalorian. Now my memory, and probably my granddad's memory at the time, Giant Haystacks is always wearing an exact replica of the Gamorrean guard costume, but a quick Google search shows that through the haze of my memory, we're not entirely right. In reality, Giant Haystacks costume, while still pretty Star Warsy, only has a passing resemblance to Jabba's guards, but it doesn't really matter to me. The Gamorrean guards and Giant Haystacks will be forever intertwined. Love this. This is some old school wrestling history, Joseph. This is, and I've got pictures up too to remind me of myself, the late great Giant Haystacks. And yeah, there's some fur vest type of stuff going on with Giant Haystacks that is not unlike the Gamorrean guards. Not unlike.
Okay. Yeah. I'm pulling them up because I am not familiar. Oh, yeah. Damn. Okay. I can see it.
Yeah. The late John Hayseks was billed at about 6'11", 685 pounds. Wrestling does have a tendency to exaggerate some of those sizes, but he was a big gentleman. And I could totally see this. If someone told me that as a kid, you know, not just John Hayseks, but any kind of, oh, that Grimoire guard looks like this. It would be part of my memory. It would be part of the experience and hard to separate it. And then to come back and actually get Gamorrean guards in a wrestling ring, and David's referencing the slimmer nature of the Gamorrean guards in Mandalorian, which has been talked about a lot, which just because they're burning calories fighting each other more, makes sense. It all works for me. My love and involvement with professional wrestling is I love what it can get represented in Star Wars in weird ways like this. And I do think a Gamorrean guard, and I'm sure there's probably some weird wrestling event where an indie show or something where someone probably did wrestle as a Gamorrean guard. You can find that kind of stuff. My pal Frankie Kazarian once wrestled, I think it's Vader, a stormtrooper. There's video of that out there too. So it all is all connected, Joseph. It's all connected.
Absolutely. And there's that old game, the Masters of Terras Kasi, of course, referenced in Solo, where I believe it was Mortal Kombat for Star Wars, right? And there's a Gamorrean guard you could fight in Masters of Terras Kasi. I'm trying to look up his name, but you got to be in the arena with that Gamorrean guard, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. Yeah. So there you go. Inspiration all around.
This is so great because I think sometimes Thok. Mm-hmm. Thok is who you fought.
That's right.
In a Tusken Raider named Hur, which was a choice. There's so many different like aesthetics that Star Wars can bring out, as we're talking about with the Western and the Samurai with the last two characters we talked about. And I think it's really fun that the aesthetic can sometimes be like, oh yes, here's the list of exactly how it's Western or Samurai. But then something like this, it's almost coming a little more from personal memory and personal experience and personal connection to that wrestler. Right. And it's just another great example of just how we can all put Star Wars through our own filter and have it bring us a specific kind of joy.
Yeah, indeed. And it's funny, I'm pulling up Grimoire guard images as well, because I know exactly what you're talking about, David. In your head, you're thinking Haystacks had that big furry vest and that's what the Grimoire guard had. But no, he actually had furry pants on. Furry.
Skort?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's all connected in the memories, and the memories fill in those little details for us as Star Wars fans. That's part of the joy, part of the experience, and part of the fun of looking back. And Gamorrean guards are so memorable anyways. I mean, I had quite a reaction to him as a kid. I go on this often, Joseph, like I can get so, you know, years just going Jackson, the robot, the rabbit, pilot and scoundrel in Star Wars has no place in Star Wars. But in the meantime, I'm like, I love this giant green pig that was running around Jabba's palace. It all kind of can work. And it also connects, goes back to your childhood with what you see the first time in those early memories.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so much about the Gamorrean guard that is all about the pig relationship, right?
Yep.
Because I remember back in the day, this is one of those kind of, you know, forgotten things that, you know, there were swaths of fans who were really, really mad about Return of the Jedi. And one of the things that you would hear every once in a while was because it was nowhere near as creative. It was just the guards were just pigs. Come on, come up with an interesting alien like an Ithorian instead of just a pig. And I was never bothered by that. I always found them kind of like scary and fascinating, and also a little, you know, sympathetic, because they look so badass, and then they just, you know, get pushed around by Luke and devoured by a Rancor. They don't do a great job at that whole guarding thing, but they look terrifying.
And talking about costumes and character design and all those kind of things, I mean, you could totally tell the fun that was probably had in the creature shop putting together pig guards. Like, what is that mean? What does that look? What does that feel like? And the memories of how that came to be. I don't know if George said, "Yeah, give me a pig guard," or, you know, someone in the creature shop said, "What about this idea?" And it all kind of worked. I have to check on the story, but then to take that and then to like, what makes that work? Well, we got some armor on the shoulders. We got this this tunic. We got the furry underpants. Like, we got it all. There comes in the character and the sandals. By the way, one of the forgotten details of the Gamorrean guard that I like, the comfortable footwear.
Yeah, you know what? And this is what I'm really enjoying about this conversation, Ken, is I think I have to accept that for me, when I think about Gamorrean guards, I think pig, I think green, mm-hmm. I think axe, and maybe if I'm lucky, I think horns. There's so much to be first on your list when you think of a Gamorrean guard that I don't know that I've really kind of turned an analytical eye ever to their outfits, right?
Yeah.
And there is a little bit of almost like a Roman gladiator vibe, I would say. Which makes sense for wrestling, right? Which is kind of an evolution of let's make, you know, combat a form of entertainment, right?
Yeah, tell stories through combat. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, but like with the sandals, those are real Romanesque. That that armor mm-hmm. and that style, that hat, whatever you would call that, the half helmet. It's really evocative. The shape is very similar to what Time Lords wear on Gallifrey, which is a weird vibe. But there is a little bit. But what connects it is, I think it is a shape that, for me, evokes ancient societies.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It pulls from, absolutely pulls from it. And again, there comes the little details of designs that make things like this work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
George wants a pig guard. All right, but how do we make that work?
Okay, if it's sort of a Roman legionnaire that drooled a lot. And it's green, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and a big axe and the other cool weapons. So to wrap up our conversation here, totally understand that connection to giant haystacks, and I think it does evoke, even if the fur's in a different place, I can really see where that connection was made, and very cool. To hear the story of that personal connection and the thrill of seeing the Gamorreans actually in the ring. How are you feeling with a little bit of time past? You know, in general, people love Mandalorian, but that's one of the things I've seen bubbling of like, Mandalorian season 2 is great. But can we talk about the Gamorreans?
Yes. And
How are you feeling? Are you pro Mandalorian Gamorreans?
I'm pro the idea. And I know our pal and the man who makes all our wonderful theme songs here, Tony Thaxton, he's been on this a lot, right? I think he's going to start writing songs about this, and he should. I absolutely find it fine. It's fine. Like I said, if the adjustment for me is they're a little taller, a little thinner, and that might be what they're training for this specific fighting. I don't spend a lot of time, I'm not up at night thinking about this, but they do stand out to me as slightly different. They do stand out to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I kind of don't mind because I like a little bit of variety. You know, I like that. Yeah, they've got different life choices. Mm-hmm. Maybe they come from a different part of their home planet. Who knows?
We got off-world Jawas. We got fighting Gamorreans now. It's a little different.
Yeah. And this is something that I will, of course, bow to your experience as a security guard. But it really does seem like the Gamorrean guards at Jabba's palace are there mostly to intimidate. They are like bouncers at a bar where there's never a fight. Like, I don't think they get to do much is the vibe I get.
Yeah. They're definitely, that works for me. I'd love to know their rank and file system, you know, their 10-day training programs. I'd love to know how they organize. Are there captains of the guard? Like, what's going on there? Like, I actually hadn't really thought about that till now. Yeah. They're not like, an insurance need where a lot of on-site security is just to tell the insurance company that you tried, to be honest. I'd love to know. Maybe there's a Legends book called the morning shift, and it's Gamorrean guards working the morning shift at Jabba's Palace. I don't know. If there isn't, maybe we need to write it. I don't know, but that is fascinating. This is why I love the conversation. Through David's personal journey connection with this, you and I are now wondering about who's the shift supervisor at the Jabba's Palace Gamorrean Guard team.
I don't think the Gamorreans have a good benefits package. Put it that way. I think if they get hurt on the job, that's on them. You know, I don't think Jabba was making any payouts for the Gamorrean who fell into the Rancor pit.
Yeah. Probably not. I wonder, no Gamorrean guard union protecting from Rancor death.
Yeah, sadly, poor Jubnuck, I believe.
Yes.
Anyway, great entry here to discuss the outfits of the Gamorrean guards, David. Thank you for sharing this great memory and this great connection and leading us to some interesting thoughts that will also cause us to probably have to review Tales of Jabba's Palace and see what's in there. But for now, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to share the rest of our favorite outfits in Star Wars.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of favorite outfits in Star Wars. We have two more great entries from our patrons on Patreon. We put the call out and you gave us some great answers. Our next answer here is from Andrew Holmes. Andrew says, "Hi, Force Center team. I could rave about capes all day and firmly believe every single Padme or Leia outfit belongs in the Star Wars Hall of Fame. However, the very first costume to pop for me was the Rebel pilot flight suits. There's something so wonderful and bizarre about the bright orange. They're so real-worldly in terms of jet pilot suit, but then the bright orange with these cool, futuristic-looking packs makes it so wonderfully familiar, yet, dare I say, from another galaxy far, far away. It's also a great example of costume design as a visual storyteller. In A New Hope, we have the muted beige-brown palettes of Tatooine, then a huge amount of white, gray, and black inside the Death Star. Then suddenly, when we meet the full rebellion, our heroes stand out in such stark contrast to the Empire in these bright orange jumpsuits. Talk about signposting the good guys. I remember instantly falling in love with these fly boys and gals the moment I saw them, such a sudden standout, and hey, it would keep you safe jogging at night too. I also love the unique and individual helmet designs for each pilot that really helps tell their own story slash give them character. I also must give a quick Star Wars ranked honorable mention to Poe Dameron's, yes, another flyboy, jacket in The Last Jedi. Basic, cool, and simple brown leather, but I love the big, bold, classic red Rebel insignia on the sleeve. In my memory, it's the first time we see an item of clothing so boldly bearing the symbol. I could be wrong, but it speaks so much to how dedicated Poe is to the cause, which is albeit flawed plans show throughout the film, but it is also just a dang cool jacket. I mean, come on. We would all buy one of these if they were on the shelf, right? Smiley face. I will kick off our conversation by saying I agree with your smiley face. Poe's jacket in Last Jedi might be one of my my favorite outfits because of the bold simplicity. The cut is absolutely that cool Star Wars jacket cut, and I agree that Rebel insignia is just a great, like Andrew is saying, just a great signposting of Poe is the guy who is so all in on the resistance that it almost clouds his judgment because he's so committed. He's literally wearing it on his sleeve.
Yeah. Yeah. And Finn's got his old jacket, which maybe is sans that bold insignia, but a good just visual reference of where we're going, where Finn is and where Poe is at the time. I think that's a great way to look at it there. And yeah, a good simple jacket in Star Wars goes a long way.
Yeah, there's something about Poe's jacket, too, that because he's a jacket guy, and we know from some of the deleted scenes that that he's handy with a sewing kit. He patched up the holes in his old jacket for Finn, that there's a part of me that wonders, like, did Poe make these jackets as like a team thing? And like, hey, everybody, I think we should wear these jackets. And he's the only one doing it.
I have a buddy that makes T-shirts for any event. We're gonna all go to lunch. I made T-shirts. Wood Ranch 2020. Like, let's do it. Like, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Maybe he made them all for the mutiny. Maybe those are the mutiny jackets. That doesn't work timeline wise. That's a joke. Just a joke.
Yes.
But yeah, I would love that jacket. All right, Ken. Let's get into the meat of this. Great entry from Andrew. How do you feel about the pilot suits? Are they up there? Is some of the best in Star Wars for you?
This is a great, great entry, Andrew. This is a great pull because, yes, and they're so good and they're so great. They're so classic. They just almost fade in the background because you just feel they've always been there. They're just awesome. They're the pilot costumes, and you got your Kenner figure, you got your Luke, you got this. But they're so just, they're just so part of the tapestry of Star Wars. I don't think you stop, much like you and I weren't stopping to think of the Gamorrean guard's footwear too much. You don't stop and really think about it until it's on screen or until it's in front of you or until you see someone new in it. Like when Poe Dameron, remember the first Force Awakens like teaser where you got to see Poe in there and it was like, ooh, like Rebel pilot costume, a little brighter orange, a little different hue of it, but like, it's the same thing we know and love. And like you had a reaction to that. And then even when like Blue Squad, General Merrick shows up and they're wearing blue because it's Blue Squad, it's still part of it. You're like, ah, and then A-Wings and Y-Wing pilots and Return of the Jedi. But it all goes back to this design that just pops. And I think we need to at times stop and just pay our respects to the original pilot outfit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so many things that Andrew says here that are just so spot on, similar to what we've been talking about earlier with Embo and Cad Bane in particular. I think Andrew's so right to highlight that it's wonderfully familiar,
But then there's these exotic space things that make it feel like it's from a galaxy far, far away with all that just kind of the tubes.
Yeah.
The tubes. Who knew that one of the magic things of Star Wars design is throw some tubes on there in the chest unit and the lacing of things to legs or ankles. Right. I mean, that is a real world thing, too. But it's just I think aesthetically there is there's something about the any sort of outfit that kind of looks like a uniform and then something else looks a little low slung, you know.
Yeah,
but like with the way the loops are on the leg, and it's the same way I think that, you know, the blaster holster looks cooler when it's slung low on the leg, you know. I don't know, for me that comes from, you know, liking classic rock guitarists and seeing like, wow, look at how low slung Slash's guitar is right now. So, yeah, I think there's definitely that aesthetic to it that is the mix of the old and the new that makes it pop. And Andrew's point about a big, big blast of color at this point in the film is absolutely going to have an effect on the way you think about it. Right. Even if it's either, you know, signposting the heroes, like Andrew says, which I totally agree with. But it's also just that, like, what a just great visual way to kind of just set up alarm, like, this is serious. They're wearing orange. This is an alert color.
I would never call New Hope drab, right? But there's a lot of sand tones. We spent a lot of time on a desert planet. The dark sleek grays and blacks and whites of the Empire. This just boom. You turn the corner, there's a room full of pilots in orange. Like, yeah, you're gonna remember that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think going back to like action figure days for people who are around for the original trilogy, it was also in some ways like the first alternate costume, right?
Yeah.
Because they didn't make action figures. The only change Han makes is he buttons his shirt for the medal ceremony, which I would have bought that in a kid if they made it one buttoned Han for medal ceremony. And in Luke's medal ceremony outfit is obviously there. And Leia's change for the medal ceremony. But for action figures, that was like one of the first, like, you want to have both Lukes, right? You want to have Farm Boy and Rebel Pilot, right?
You gotta.
So yeah. It's such a great celebration of that. The other thing that I wanted to mention in Andrew's great entry here is there's so many different pockets of fun things to explore in Star Wars, right? And one of the things that I have not explored a lot is the helmet designs. Is this a rabbit hole you've gone down, Ken, really studying the different helmet designs for the pilots?
Yes. Over the years, absolutely. But it became a little bit easier and a little more accessible for me personally with a lot of the visual dictionaries, encyclopedias, and whatnots being dumped into the world since 2014 on, right? And for some reason, what really made me focus on it was wanting to make sure I knew what helmet Rey had on, which is the one I forget now the pilot's name because I'm not studying for a trivia contest, but from the Tearfawn Yellow Aces, we're at the Battle of Jakku, and just wanting to know, okay, what does that actually mean? And then digging in and just, you know, Wedge and Biggs, and you can, you know, Luke as a pretty distinct helmet that's in its simplicity, I think. It's really fun. Making a weird connection to sports, but like catcher gear or hockey goalie masks can be very personalized. And there's just something about that as both not just a sportsman, but also like a collector. You're like, ooh,
yeah.
You get the Wedge. Let me get the Poe helmet. And let me pay attention to it. Where you got TIE fighter pilots, wonderful, sleek design, but, you know, not a lot of personality on their helmets over there. So it's something that in the last few years has popped for me more than it ever did growing up in the 80s.
Yeah, no, this was just a moment for me of like, I've always appreciated it. I think I've always appreciated that there is so much iconography on the helmets because, yeah, it is that contrast of diversity compared to the stormtroopers in the Empire. But then it's also just like it's one of those tip of the iceberg visual storytelling things of the first film of Star Wars of like they all got a bunch of symbols on their helmets that probably mean different things inside the rebellion to their culture. You know, is that an alphabet or is that a personal tag? Is that something they designed or is that something that somebody would see that on somebody's helmet and everybody would know? Yes, of course, I know what that means. You know, in modern canon, it's like, oh, cool. That's that logo from your favorite Holonet show growing up. You know, who knows what all they are? So I always appreciated the diversity of designs. but I never have done like a deep dive just for fun myself, really looking and really studying which design is which. And this entry and asking for people's favorite things, this is why I love doing it, because sometimes it points me at a part of Star Wars that is a fun rabbit hole that I haven't taken the time to dive down that rabbit hole.
You know what? And then maybe we'll do our Star Wars ranked favorite Rebel helmets, favorite X-Wing helmets down the line.
Ah, man, I would love that. Because as I was talking, it's like, who's the checkerboard? Yep. Oh, it's Big. I was like, is it Biggs? Is Biggs the checkerboard? And like, yep, Biggs is the checkerboard. And I'm having so much fun trying to multitask helmet research and speaking.
That often these episodes are you and me scrolling to not just jog our memory, but going into rabble. And this is why, you know, we rebroadcast stuff on YouTube and people are always like, we have video. We really appreciate that. One day we'll put some more video content with our faces actually on it. We both have some fun beards going right now. All right. But this is why you just don't need to see us scrolling through X-Wing helmets.
Well, we'll just do a show called Google with Ken and Joseph and we'll.
Yeah, that would be it. Well, one of the things I Googled while we're talking is this, the beautiful simplicity of the X-Wing pilot costume and how it just made an impact early on. Remember that thing? It went viral maybe 2021. What year are we in? I can't remember. It's been maybe gone viral a couple times, actually. With that thing that got tweeted out and someone said, this is my friend TJ wearing a costume she made for Halloween 1977. She was 16 at the time. And it's this young woman that made the X-Wing pilot costume, essentially made Luke's pilot costume by hand, by scratch, by memory, by just seeing the movie in theaters, and how even then, even then, it meant a lot. And this picture I'm looking at right now, just the detail in 77 from memory, just this outfit, this pilot's costume, just grabbed on to her heart and so many fans from that point on. So this is we don't ever want to overlook the X-Wing pilot.
No. And that photo, and if you're not familiar with that story, I'm looking at it right now, too. Just pull it up. It is so well done. And it is such a tribute to all the different fandom that was awakened by that first film. And it is such a charming photo and story of imagining TJ, as it says in this story, that she went to the movie a bunch of times, took notes with a flashlight, drew a bunch of sketches and put this together. That kind of fun of exploration when you did not have a visual dictionary that came out the same day as the film.
Yep.
Great stuff. All right. We're almost done with this episode of Googling with Ken and Joseph, but first we have one more entry that Ken is going to read.
Douglas Du Bois says, sometimes I say that 100% right. I think Douglas even said, you said my name right. And then other times I just dropped the ball and I'm just the worst, Joseph. Douglas says, as a kid with my Kenner collection, the Empire Strikes Back figures had most of my favorite looks. Hoth Leia, Bespin Luke, and Han. But if I were feeling really bold, I would love to be able to pull off the cape look while I'm out picking up some groceries. Cloud City Administrator. We have got, I just scrolled. See, I scrolled while reading. Cloud City Administrator Lando is one stylish gentleman, as is the Solo version. You could never accuse Lando of not looking great in a cape, but I have to give it to Kira on Kessel. Of all the great looks Emilia Clarke wears in Game of Thrones, it's this look that says, I'm stylish, but dangerous too. I mean, yes, I agree with that in heart and theory too. Put her on top of a dragon with some fire, she's very dangerous. But I love this entry, Douglas. Love this. Capes in Star Wars are just such a part of Star Wars, part of the history. They've done such a good job with Lando, just expanding his collection and cape desires. And this is a great one, Joseph, focusing on Kira on Kessel.
Yeah, no, the great shout outs there. Last episode, we talked a lot about how Bespin Luke can sometimes get overlooked in our love of the jacket of Han, Hoth Leia. So we're right there with you, Douglas, on that one. Obviously, Lando is one of the absolute leaders in Star Wars fashion. I empathize with Douglas, kind of wishing that, like, yeah, look, you can be bold and wear a cape, but you're going to get some looks. And there's sometimes a longing for a world where, like, what if we all just kind of caped all the time and it was no big deal, right? You could enjoy the cape without getting the weird looks or the conversations.
Yeah.
I really empathize with that. But, man, I was this entry, when I first read it, just took me on a ride because, like, cool, happy to talk about that. Cool, happy to talk about Lando Scapes. And like, and then it came to this, Kira. Oh, and this one, Kira. It's so great to see that. Whatever initial reactions to Solo were from fans about the actual quality of the film or for the box office, all that has really seemed to quiet it down into just fans really, a lot of fans really liking the film and a lot of fans really coalescing around the character of Kira. And I'm so happy about that because I absolutely love Kira. And I think one of the really, really strong things about Kira is the costume design supports everything that's going on in the script, everything that Emilia Clarke is doing such a great job just bringing it in this film, and that we go from that look on Corellia, which we now know is the sort of like, these are, I got these nice clothes on a job for the White Wormans and I tried to keep them clean because this is the nicest I could look. And then she's got the, you know, amazing, I am both a dangerous gangster and a hostess. a host of this party look. Then the Vandor look is great, which is this kind of transition into I am running this operation, you know, a little bit closer to Rogue and Scoundrel. And then this, the one that that is being discussed here by Douglas, this absolutely great, I am in command, pretending to be the administrative assistant to the Vice Admiral of, I will remember the rest of it later. that is, I think out of all of her outfits, I agree with Douglas that that one is my favorite because it is so classic Star Wars while also moving the needle forward. Yep. It is so about the cape, but the cape is also, it's not just a cape. It is a combination of cloak and cape and chest armor almost. It's got that great, if people aren't Googling like we are, it's got that great, almost like the shape of the clone armor that Jedi wear of just over the shoulders in the sternum with this black collar, just that huge chunk of black is just so commanding. And then like, well, hey, if I have a huge chunk of black, what could be more commanding? A flood of red of the cape flowing out. And it just really does. This cape says, do business with me or I can kill you.
I could toss grenades at your blasters.
I will stab you with your own keys.
Yeah. Yeah, which is what was needed. And they do such a great job with Kira. And this outfit featured in that trailer, right? And her walking out of the Falcon with some of the smoke clearing on Kessel, L3 behind her, that red cape, even especially when you didn't even know the context of the scene, you see the shot. That was immediately to me a real classic Star Wars shot. It's a real classic Star Wars outfit, that magic ingredient that you and I talk about that sometimes you can put your finger on, sometimes you can, in terms of like how's it working, how's it popping. This just immediately just worked for me. And there was, for me personally, maybe because it is, my love of Game of Thrones and Daenerys and everything, and just the history of, Hoth, Leia and Padme and all those kind of different looks for a lot of our female lead characters in Star Wars. I had a little bit of high expectations of what are you going to do with this character? How are these designs going to go? And every one of the designs you described, Joseph, has great purpose, has great meaning, a great they fit into the story and the character so well. And I really think that's one of the things they did so well with Solo was the looks of Kira.
Yeah, absolutely. And the her being really adaptable to situations, analytical, knows what's going on, knows, what she needs to present in which situation to get what she wants, all fits, what the character's going through. My final thought on this is, I'm really putting my hopes out into the galaxy for some action figures of this look. Because for Black Series, I think we just have Corellia. And then for 3¾, we have the Corellia look. And then we have the great Vandor look in the 4-pack for the 3¾. So I'm glad that we at least got that. But look, the galaxy needs this Kira action figure.
It really does. It really does. It's so good. And let's not forget, Emilia Clarke's like 5'2", 5'3" in real life, right? And she looks 6'5" coming out of there. And it's just everything about it is power, control, and purpose for that character, for that moment, for what she's trying to do. I love everything about it. Big win for the design team in Solo.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredibly well done. A great action figure, and I look forward to seeing it. And when that action figure comes out, a great action figure possibility, I should say, I want them to have like the big like Kira, and then you know how they had come up with like sub names for outfits. Yeah. You know, I don't want it to just be like Kessel Raid. I want it to be Kira in disguise of blah, 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 blah. And then the whole big long list in tiny, tiny font that I can't even read.
Yeah. I would love that.
That would be great. Great thought, Douglas. Thanks for giving us a chance to go on about Kira, as I'm sure that it sounds like we'll be getting some chances to do. Maybe. Who knows? We will see. Ken, any final thoughts on our episodes about Star Wars outfits?
It's just been a lot of fun, this two-part episode. We love doing the from a certain point of view stuff. I love that you put it together, Joseph, and collect our listeners' great thoughts. But we'd love putting the spotlight on what they, you out there listening to Force Center, what you love, what you connect to, and that's always fun. But then it connects to us, or you get a new area to focus on. Gamorrean footwear, X-Wing helmets. We've been watching Star Wars and reading Star Wars a long time, you and I, Joseph, and there's still little areas we love to explore, and a lot of that is now comes from your perspectives listening.
That's right. I can't wait to dive into Gamorrean footwear and Rebel helmets. If I'm not careful, that's going to be my whole day after we finish recording. So thank you all. I'll be putting out some more calls for favorite points of view in the future. As Ken just said, this is just a great way for us to hear what everybody thinks, to celebrate some different points of view, and to get some new inspirations for ourselves. But for now, Ken, where can people find you on your other adventures?
My other adventures are out there at KenNapsok.com or at KenNapsok on Instagram and Twitter. Coming up, if you're in the Seattle area on July 24th, doing comedy with Mark Ellis as our headliner and Daniel Bridge-Gadd heading up there with us as well. So if you're there, go get tickets at Mark Ellis's website. And also follow me over at the GPA, thegpa.fun.
Excellent. And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my other podcast, Obsessed, my comedy albums, future live shows, all on josephscrimshaw.com. You can also like Force Center on Facebook and follow us on Twitter is at Force Center Pod and buy our merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And of course, you can support our Patreon by visiting patreon.com/Force Center. Thanks to everybody who is currently a patron on Patreon. That's where all of these great points of view came from. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thank you so much for taking the time to share your point of view. Thank you all for listening. And as Obi-Wan Kenobi once said, another happy land.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.